Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Sublimely Gothic, the podcast devoted only to the most sordid and macabre tales ever penned to paper. Here you shall explore the darkest jewels of literature with gothic enthusiasts Amy and Jess. Enter this realm at your own risk, for the night is dark and full of terrors. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're talking about The Wife Upstairs, the modern reimagining of Jane Eyre set in Birmingham, Alabama by Rachel Hawkins.
Very nice. Very nice.
So this was my personal pick for my brand new release of January 2021. Like back when I was doing BookTube, like I'm just not doing BookTube anymore because of all the Harry Potter podcasts and everything we do. But back when I was doing it, my like sort of format was that it's like, okay, I'm going to pick one brand new release and give a super in-depth spoiler review, which is what I did for Wife Upstairs.
Yeah, and I'm glad you did it because it could help. I read this book. It was a book of the month pick in December 2020. So I think it came out a little early through Book of the Month. I don't think I read it. I think I read it in January as well. So it helped refresh my memory. Because there have been several books in between.
Oh, I see. Yeah, so it was just really hyped up. Again, just the idea of, I'm sure it hasn't been the only like Jane Eyre reimagining, because as we were discussing, you know, last night, that Jane Eyre is a very classic, you know, kind of rags to riches story in the same sort of vein as Cinderella, right?
Right, yeah. That, hold on one second. Of course, I didn't turn on one of these notifications.
Let me just pour myself some more.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm so sorry. I forgot what I was saying. I'm sorry. It's work.
Just the idea that this was very much hyped up. And, you know, I really loved it. 5 stars particularly. But for a lot of people, like other BookTubers, like it was really slow for them and they didn't like it.
That's really interesting. So I've knew it was pretty hyped up, like you mentioned, and I didn't really understand why, because especially like the conversation we had about retellings of Jane Eyre and kind of things like that. And then I kind of found out that the author is an author of several YA books. I didn't know that.
Under another name. Yeah.
Okay. So then it made sense to me, like, oh, no wonder this is getting some sort of traction. I mean, these were my thoughts prior to reading the book. And I enjoyed it as well. I think one of the genres that I kind of gravitate toward, occasionally is a domestic thriller. And I feel like this one was done, and you mentioned it in your BookTube review as well. I think this one was done pretty well. I feel pretty well versed in that genre specifically. And this was not one that I ended it and thought, like, why did I waste my time? I definitely enjoyed the reimagining of the story. I enjoyed like kind of trying to figure out who was who in Jane Eyre versus this novel. So it was a pretty enjoyable book, I think.
Yeah. And I think for me, you know, I think it's, again, I think whether how much you like this book is dependent on how much of a Jane Eyre fan you are. But even for the bits where I understand why people interpret it as slow, for me, it wasn't slow because to me, there was so much commentary on classism and socioeconomic mobility.
I agree with that 100%. There was definitely commentary on that. And I appreciated that because it kind of takes us out of complete fantasy land. A little bit. There was some struggles that I'm going to put Jane in quotes, Jane had, that were very relatable, I thought.
Yeah. And I'm too tipsy right now to have mentioned it earlier, but of course this is spoilers as always with all our books. But as this is a modern book warning, if you have not read The Wife Upstairs, I suggest you stop listening.
Yes, please do.
So yeah, so for me, the slow pacedness of it, and I'm exactly like you, I really have come to like sort of domestic thrillers, and it's the only kind of genre at this point where I will step out of my, you know, fantasy land of, you know, dragons and historical fiction and all sorts of stuff. It's the only way I will touch contemporary at this point.
Is the domestic thriller, that's the only way that you'll gravitate toward toward that specific genre, you said.
Right? Yeah, like anything that is rooted in like sort of realism, yeah, the thriller and like sort of mystery is the only way I can get towards it.
That's funny. I mean, and I do read a little bit more contemporary, but there is sometimes I just get in the mood for something like this. And this was kind of the perfect like marriage of the, there wasn't, I mean, I wouldn't even, I guess maybe momentarily there was a fantasy element in that, you know, hearing the noise upstairs. I mean, we figure out that out how, but that is pretty quick, but pretty much rooted in realism, but in enjoyable. I don't know.
Yeah. So basically I think the way this was hyped up so much as the Jane Eyre reimagining, again, not that this hasn't existed before, but I think this is the first one in a while that literally kept the names of the characters.
Yeah, and they were surprising when I went back to look at the character list for Jane Eyre. I could not believe how many repeat names were in here. From like Blanche was going to be Mr. Rochester's, he was going to marry her, and she is a woman that is, I think, suspecting yeah. him of having an affair with her, and it's also her friend. So it's kind of like a mind melt to be like, this is this person here. And then the dog, you know, the dog's name is Adele.
Yeah, of course, is Adele. And yeah, like just all just, and then also the super sleazy creepy guy that she's living with in the beginning, like that's after he's, I believe, Elton, he's named after, you know, her cousin that tries to get Jane to marry him, remember?
Okay, that was kind
of, so they have, and they had this mention of like he's part of like the church, quote unquote, like youth program or community or whatever, even though he's super sleazy, but he, you know, she even draws upon that.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of, I appreciated that, that connection and having him be involved in the church and kind of the way she gets back at him a little bit. He was really, really, I hate him,
but I liked how she's kind of, again, in a way paying homage to, like, you know, the author's Southern culture, but also showing the dark underbelly of certain elements of, you know, super conservative Christianity.
Absolutely. And I mean, I have grown up around enough church going people to know that that is not, you know, an abnormality. You know, that is something that seems to be prevalent. I don't know. I'm like, I don't want to rag on people too much, but there were some little nuances about Southern life that I appreciated in this book as well. Just having some relatives who are from the South. So
yeah. And so here, what notes do I have? Again, I don't have them in any particular chronological. I think one way I kind of broke down my thoughts was, you know, basically there are three books that this book is alluding to. The main one, of course, being Jane Eyre. The second most important being Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. And the third one, little sprinkles in of Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte.
Yeah. And the Wuthering Heights thing that you pointed out in your BookTube review, I didn't put that together until, you know, you mentioned that. And I'm going to take a beat. Do we want to do our 60-second review? Or are we still just talking before that?
Oh, yeah. Again, I'm tipsy. I didn't remember. So, yeah.
That's okay.
We can do our 60-second recap.
Okay. Okay. I didn't know.
Yeah. Let me just pull out my phone. Okay. I will go first. So, let's see. 1 minute. 3, 2, 1, go. So we have this really bitter, broke dog walker who walks all the dogs for all the Stepford wives at Thornfield Estates, this gated community in Alabama. By happenstance, she runs into one of the, like, you know, eligible bachelors, only recently widowed because his wife kind of disappeared, vanished in crazy boating accidents. They start dating, they get engaged, creepy stuff happens, something with Ingrid Blanche, you know, her husband gets charged with the murder, but Jane thinks maybe there's something more to it than that. And of course, the wife upstairs is, you know, Eddie's wife, who he locked in because he suspected her of killing Blanche, so she wasn't all that innocent, making her more like, you know, Rebecca from Rebecca and Daphne du Maurier, and then the house burns and they supposedly die and Jane inherits everything from Eddie.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Beautiful.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, I'm going to set my timer here and 3, 2, 1. Okay, so we meet Jane. She's kind of having a rough go. She is a dog walker with an eye for I don't know, hot men. And so she is walking around this rich neighborhood. She and Eddie Rochester get together. And kind of through their relationship and through just how people love to gossip, she kind of uncovers some secrets about her soon-to-be husband, and also hears some knocking in the house. She gets to live in Eddie's beautiful house. Turns out he's locked his wife upstairs, shockingly enough. And they have a confrontation. Everybody has a confrontation. Of course, the place burns down and Jane, quote unquote, lives happily ever after, maybe. I don't know. But
okay. By herself.
But by herself. Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
maybe
so,
that's where she wanted. I don't know.
Again, so I feel like, you know, with Jane Eyre, you know, the character and plot is very similar. But on a super, like, deeper meta level, the author is actually leaning more in the footsteps of Emily Bronte to suggest that this whole sort of, that you can have a happily ever after with a brooding character like Eddie Rochester, that's just not realistic.
Yeah, this Eddie, you know what, kind of when all the action and things play out, he seems like more of a jerk than I thought him initially. And I kind of believed the fact where they weren't really in love. It was all very surface level, it seemed. Like, it, you know, at the kind of the ending, she's kind of like, well, I mean, whatever. She doesn't seem too busted up over him being the not nice person that he was.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, I don't know what I think, you know, with Eddie Rochester's character and the wife upstairs, I think there is a sense, again, there's no way to keep the integral plot of Jane Eyre in a modern setting without having the ending totally change. Because, yeah, you know, from us looking at it, looking at Jane Eyre with a degree of historical forgiveness, we understand to varying degrees why Edward Rochester has his wife, you know, locked in his house, because in the Victorian era, the alternative would be a lunatic asylum where she would have been subjected to even worse treatment. So even though he's imprisoning her, it in that very specific social circumstances, what he's doing is somewhat an act of mercy.
Yeah, I think you are exactly right. It makes sense for the Jane Eyre time. It's a little, I guess, you know, thinking that she had, or giving the impression that she had drowned but was unable to be found, and then keeping her in a panic room. I don't know. It's a little.
Yeah, again, no, I struggled with it as well. Like, if you want to keep it that close to the Jane Eyre plot, you know, again, in modern times, it doesn't make sense that, I was thinking this, I was reading, it's like, if he literally has her in the panic room, you know, then how can he still, you know, maintain his status as a quote-unquote good guy like the original Edward Rochester? Because, again, as we explained, why it makes sense in the Victorian period, but in the modern era, especially, there's been tons of protests within the last year about racial injustice and police brutality and all those things. So not that the police are perfect and the sense of law and order is not pristine by any sense of the imagination, for Eddie, as a wealthy white man, there should be no reason, like, you cannot say it's a smart idea or a merciful idea to lock his conniving wife in the panic room.
Yeah, no, and that relationship is just so messed up, because he, first of all, the panic room seems pretty all right. I mean, other than just being bored, there's like a bed and I don't know. When I envision a panic room, I think of something completely, completely different, but
block.
Yeah, basically, because like, right.
Flashlights and provisions.
It kind of like, that's kind of what I imagined, but this almost seemed like it was a guest house that she was kind of put up in, which whatever. I mean, I'm not a really rich Southern person. I don't have a like fancy panic room and that's fine. But their relationship was very strange, and especially compared to Jane Eyre. I mean, I never got the impression, and again, different time period, that, you know, Jane Eyre's Mr. Rochester was going up and like getting it on with his hidden wife. It was just kind of like, she's there because I'm trying to protect her. This Eddie Rochester was a much darker.
Yeah. And figure. I'm just asking, why would he want to protect her? Like they sort of explain it as, you know, he's like, oh crap, we're in a death penalty. Like, this is so cut and dry. Like, this is the only option I can do. This is all I can do to save her. Why, if she's such a conniving bitch?
You know, I don't know. Do you think she was abusive to him? Maybe like more over the relationship. I mean, they both weren't, these people weren't likable people, but
yeah, definitely. I think she was, I would understand it more if it had sort of played out that, you know, he found B and kind of put it all together that she murdered Blanche and just said, like, I'm going to turn you in. It's like, oh no, you're not. Because like, if you do, I'm going to hurt someone you care about. Like if she was like attempting to blackmail him, like, or to hurt someone or blackmail him in some other fashion, then I feel like that would have made more sense, you know, for him to get desperate and lock her in the panic room.
Yeah. Yeah. There didn't seem to be a lot of reasoning other than just to protect her from the death penalty, which I guess is reason, but I don't know. All I can think about when we're talking about, you know, her killing her friend is how creepy that lake is because there's like a forest in the bottom of it, right? Like, that's so crazy.
Yeah. So again, so B is not at, you know, in original Jane Eyre, Rochester's wife is more or less a victim of circumstance. Their parents, you know, forced this arrangement. She seemed okay in the beginning, whether she actually read Chester or not, or he her, that seems uncertain, but soon her like mental health, you know, disintegrated and she, you know, descended into madness. So she's a tragic figure. She wasn't like conniving or evil. Here, she's very much like Rebecca, where she is evil and she kills Blanche in essence because, you know, the whole thing in the book is B has this whole like design company or interior design business.
Right.
And it's heavily implied that B ultimately plagiarized and stole a lot of her design ideas from Blanche.
Yeah, which is kind of a cool way to make a villainous character. I mean, it's a very modern way to make a villainous character, but you're exactly right. Like, she's malicious. The Eddie's wife in Jane Eyre was just a victim of circumstance and seemed to have some mental illness.
Nothing was premeditated in her storyline.
No.
So one way I like to compare B with Jane, and I think I discussed this in my BookTube thing, is social mobility, particularly for women.
Yeah, no, I think that was an excellent point and thing to talk about. Yeah,
it's just the idea that B, in a way, is a much more feminist ascent into social mobility, that she, you know, pulled herself by her bootstraps and, you know, created this whole company for herself. But at the same time, she's described as having a level of ruthlessness to be able to accomplish this.
Yeah, and it makes me think of a book I read, which the title, I recommend it all the time because it's like something, The Myth of the Nice Girl. And it's not saying that being a nice person is like a bad thing. It's saying quite the opposite. But I think that's the message that I know I've received, in a business way, is like, you have to be a hard ass. You have to undercut people, cutthroat, you know, whatever. You're never going to get ahead if you don't act like B. And I don't really think that's true. I think that's kind of a crummy like thing to promote.
Yeah, also, it very much depends on the industry.
Right. Sure.
Like certainly in things like fashion, of course.
Right.
Yeah. And then certain levels of corporate, but even certain levels of corporate, again, you know, it's just a cheap way to justify being an asshole. And then so on Jane's side, quote unquote, Jane in The Wife Upstairs, you know, she's following a more traditional route of social mobility by trying to marry Eddie.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's not shown as, you know, being completely perfect, because again, you know, it's kind of, it's been, again, several months since I read it. You know, it's kind of, to me, left in the air. Again, maybe if she didn't fully love Eddie, that maybe if we just keep it at, does she have, like, genuine feelings and interest in getting to know him? Or does she purely want to use him, you know, for his money to, like, dig herself out of this poverty?
It's kind of like, I really didn't understand that at the end of the novel. I kind of felt like she thought he was attractive. And then, you know, and then he was rich. And then that was kind of like, and he seemed like not too big of a dick. So she kind of was like, all right, this works. And then toward the end of the novel, it was like, basically, that's all there was to it. There wasn't any sort of like true affection.
Assume the worst of Jane, that it was purely she's like the quote unquote gold digger. But again, all the socioeconomic commentary of, can we blame her? Or is it fair to judge her harshly for taking the gold digging approach given to what she has experienced?
I mean, no. I think you're just helping reiterate to me how much I didn't really like anybody in this book. Like, that comes to the top of my head. I can we blame her? No, I don't know. I have a hard time with all of these characters because nobody really takes like a, they're all very flawed.
Yeah, and again, just thinking, and it was interesting for this book to come out when it did, because there's so much divisiveness in America between the left and the right, and the perception of, is poverty a character defect, or is poverty simply a circumstance? And the idea of how much are you responsible for the situation you find yourself in? And, you know, no one can purely answer that, because there's not one size fit all. There's so many factors that play in on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. And I think this only kind of demonstrates the kind of really, I don't know, that that's such a big issue to kind of using these characters to explain, I think, kind of the darker side of that. Nobody really takes the noble path. I think B, on the surface, to people that don't know about her life, think that's exactly what she did. And she works really hard to keep that illusion.
To the point of pushing her mother down the stairs for embarrassment.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think we talked about humiliation and the other day. And this is like, that is essentially, you know, B was like, oh, hell no, you're not going to humiliate me. And if you do, then I'll extract my exact my revenge. And she does, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. And it's the reason why I like books like this and TV shows like Mad Men. Have you ever watched that show?
Oh, girl. I was a Mad Men devotee back in the day.
Well, I like these sort of stories because it shows that this quote unquote American dream is a fallacy, that you don't get to be, you know, be Rochester or Don Draper unless you have done something really, really ruthless and shitty, whether it's, you know, be, you know, plagiarizing other people's work, or Don literally assuming someone else's identity to claw his way into the American elite.
Right. And if I remember correctly, Blanche kind of had, she was born into wealth, right?
Basically Blanche is in the position where she kind of took be in.
Right. Because she had
tried to sort of hide all of, you know, her not so great beginnings by, you know, attaching herself to Blanche's crowd.
Right. Okay. Yeah. You know, and I think that, not to be like super dark and horrible, but I feel like the sooner you figure out, like, as a person, that the American dream is exactly that, a dream, the kind of the easier life kind of is. I think I definitely come from a generation where it was like, if you do this, this, and this, then, you know, you're going to be successful and blah, blah, blah. And then I come from a generation who has just had like punch to the face after punch to the face. And we're like, is this?
The recession, pandemic, all things.
Recession, pandemic, 9/11, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just the hits keep coming. So, you know, if you're not willing to claw and steal and I guess steal somebody's identity, then you're kind of like, you're like, okay, well, this is what it's going to be. And, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to, watch somebody die on the battlefield and steal his dog tags and assume a new identity, but
like John Draper.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just sad. Like, it's not that it's not impossible, but again, a lot of times we don't want to admit, you know, our success, even if we quote unquote deserved it as worked hard for it. We don't want to admit that a lot of it is attributed to luck, and there are people who are working just as hard and didn't land the jackpot.
Oh, 100%. And I mean, I'm a white woman too. That's the certain level of privilege that I have just by being born that way. And in America.
Yep. So anyway, so that's kind of how I've compared Jane and B. And then another way that I compare them again is this notion of culpability, because they both, in a way, or wait, okay, I think I got it wrong. Okay, B did not push her mother. Or did she? Either way, her mother did not die. Whether she pushed her or not, her mother did not die. There could have been a chance that B could have saved her had she, like, called 911, but she didn't. She just went back into her room and pretended to find her mom, you know, dead.
Right. It was kind of like her mom was kind of a drunk, so it wasn't –
it wasn't far-stretched to the imagination to, like, anyone looking in. And then on Jane's side, we learned that her foster dad was a piece of crap and he had some sort of medical emergency. And not only did she not call 911, but she also took his pills out of reach so he could not get to them.
Yeah.
And so again, this question of what is murder versus manslaughter? And even if it is premeditated, again, are we I feel like in modern rhetoric, you know, with people being fed up of all these inequalities, that they're taking a very darkly heroic Robin Hood approach to things.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't have it in me with these people. I guess that's too much Hufflepuff in me. So I couldn't be these people.
Yeah, me too. Or
they're fun to read about. They're fun to read about, but that's, and then you can kind of go, ew, and then just move on with your day, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And then, so again, what else can we talk about? Again, notions with Wuthering Heights. It's also like very specifically about Eddie's character merging more into Heathcliff than the quote unquote original Mr. Rochester. But also there are some literal like quotes that when I read them and I'm like, oh, an allusion to Wuthering Heights, because let me find it. When we finally get to Eddie's perspective in the latter, like, third of the book, he's like,
oh, yeah.
I'm sure she thought she was fooling me, thought I had bought her whole act, but I recognized too much myself in her not to see what she was doing. Whatever souls were made of, mine and Jane's were the same, or at least similar enough. And, you know, that's a direct, allusion to Catherine's speech about Heathcliff when she's questioning, like, did I do the right thing in accepting, you know, this other guy's proposal, even though Heathcliff is not socially suitable.
Right. Yeah. I'm glad you read that, because there were a couple of lines in here and I didn't highlight them or anything, but I kind of read it and I was kind of like, that feels like a little bit out of the author's voice, slightly. That it has to be somewhere
And the only reason I recognized it immediately, because I used that exact quote and posted it on Instagram like not that long ago.
Oh, well, there you go.
Because the original quote is like, you know, whatever souls are made of, like mine and, you know, mine and the other guys are as different as, you know, a lightning from a moonbeam or as frost from fire.
That's, wow. That's an intense, that's intense. I like it.
So, yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
There was a character that I Trip Ingram. So this would be Blanche's husband.
Yeah, totally invented, not part of original Jane Eyre in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, he's more kind of the, I don't know, just kind of like a cliched southern, drunken southern man, I guess.
And the typical red herring.
Yes, yeah. You kind of, they throw him in here and you're kind of led to believe he did it. But then it's also kind of like, I mean, no, he...
No, he's a Snape. Like, he's a bad person. He's a shitty person. But did he do the specific crime in question? No. Maybe he did other crimes, but not specifically this one.
Right, right, right. And so there's something that doesn't, you know, and I think, again, we can talk about the time period, but there was a lot of, like, affair and flirtation that was going on here. And I always think it's interesting to put technology in some of these retellings and see how they utilize it. Because I feel like our phones, just as people in the world, you either trust somebody to look at what's on your phone or you don't trust them at all. I mean, I don't care if my husband would scroll through my phone. He's probably not going to be, he's going to be pretty bored. But I always just think that's kind of interesting how they integrate that into a story. And I believe that's one of the, I don't know, I feel like it kind of shows up a lot in domestic thrillers, is somebody looks at somebody's phone and sees a certain message or something like that. But kind of a deviation from that is Bee's use of, I think they're romance novels, maybe, I don't know, whatever he's giving her to, you know, occupy her time. Right. And she kind of like writes her little story in the margins and slips it in Eddie's pocket, which then Jane finds and is like, oh, holy hell, this is, you know, that isn't just some nonsense upstairs. It's somebody is upstairs. So I want to know how you felt about like the whole end reveal and all of that. Like, were you satisfied with it? Did you think it was weird? I don't know.
The end reveal. I certainly appreciate that Jane could recognize immediately that this woman is not acting the way she should for someone who is supposedly innocent and was like stuck in a panic room.
Right.
So I liked that part. I was very, whether or not I was, you know, rooting for, you know, Eddie and Jane, like, to be a happily ever after, like, original Jane Eyre, I was very disappointed that, you know, I wanted, you know, she, you know, Bee is already lying about her being innocent, but also, right. So you want to think that she's lying about, okay, Eddie is sleeping with me still.
Right.
And so right. I was really sad and disappointed that I wanted their, you know, even if it's dysfunctional and messed up in a lot of ways, I still wanted Eddie. And even if they didn't end up together, I wanted Eddie and Jane's relationship to have a certain element of purity. And that hope was just totally dashed.
Yeah, that's kind of a bummer. And I feel like that happens in domestic thrillers a lot in more modern, you know, it's just kind of like it tears that all apart. And I'm like,
one thing I'm noticing in like me partaking in thrillers more, again, a big theme or a big like catalyst, whether beginning or middle of the story, is cheating. And like, you know, with my book that I'm writing, as you know, it has fantasy elements, but a lot of it will be structured in a sort of thriller fashion. And I've just sworn, like, I am not going to use cheating because that has been done too much. Like, my protagonist has her own internal conflict, like with her relationship with her mom, but I'm not going to touch cheating because that's been done way too much.
Well, I appreciate that because it's always kind of a bummer. I don't know why. That's one of those things that it always just bums me out. I guess if it like made me excited, I don't know, whatever. It's just not something that I love for my characters to do. But like I said, none of these people are really, they're not really likable people. So I'm just trying to think through some of the like key, you know, plot points and the maybe like the confrontation between Blanche and B. And it kind of starts off pretty early in like a Mexican restaurant. That's how she kind of sets it up. Is they're having they obviously these two friends have a long history, and then it's just kind of falling apart at the seams. And I think the author did a really good job of kind of writing some of that tension between these two people. But
because yeah, in a way, because it's kind of like, you know, it's just been simmering where Blanche has, again, obviously has known that B has plagiarized her, but she's already like in this sort of elite world and is married well. So it's not like she needs a sort of company of her own to be happy. So for a long, long time, she's sort of like let this whole plagiarism thing go, and probably to a certain extent felt sorry for B. And again, knowing her humble background, it's like, okay, I'm going to let B have this. But then the relationship just deteriorated and deteriorated to the point that, no, I'm not going to tolerate this anymore. Like, I know what you did. Fuck you.
Right. Yeah. It's complicated, like, female friendships. I think that's an interesting thing. It's also something that sometimes I get a little sick of reading. Like, I have found it refreshing in some shows where it's like, oh, the husband and wife actually get along, or these two friends actually, you know, aren't at each other's throats secretly. But I understand for, like, the purpose of the story, this is how it has to play out. And again, an interesting take on kind of the ruthlessness of B to kind of just steal Blanche's childhood in a way and kind of make it and profit from it.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask, what did you think of like the group of like basically Stepford wives amongst Thornfield Estates? Because I feel like the writer did a good job in showing, like, you know, in the beginning, you know, Jane has this complete and utter contempt for them and like steals from them and everything. But then slowly when she starts to date Eddie and starts to come into this circle, she begins to evolve to see them in a slightly different light, where even though she's like using Eddie for money and stuff, she also, you know, at least in certain women within the social circle, she can see sort of the humanity in some of them. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, I think that that's pretty common. I guess, you know, obviously these people have some privilege and via wealth, and it sounds like they don't have a lot to do but gossip and like create, I don't know, flower arrangements for this area that they live in. And that's fine. And Jane is resentful, and you can kind of understand her resentment. But when she kind of I always kind of got the impression a little bit that she still felt a little bit like an outsider and a little bit like she could be knocked off this, like, you know, position anytime. But I do like that there was some sort of appreciation for their humanity rather than.
Yeah, well, and then again, it's not like this is a homogenous group. Like, some women, again, would have happily knocked her off if they could. And then there are others who were genuinely, you know, more accepting and more open to her integration. And so because of that, the one thing I really, really didn't like at the end was that one of those more humanized versions of the Stepford wives at Thornfield Estates, you know, after, you know, Jane is released from the hospital, you know, I forget her name, but she allows Jane to come like live with her to like, you know, convalesce and, you know, recover. But soon after that, she starts to treat Jane like a maid. And I just really was angry that all the sort of humanizing that the writer did, and ultimately it didn't mean anything, or at least like they, without Eddie, with the physical presence of Eddie to remind them that, yeah, she's in our, you know, she's the same social station as us now, that I can treat her as the help.
Yeah, that is disappointing that kind of did turn into that. And I felt that was a little bit, you know, it wasn't too far-fetched, I think. And I'm thinking about different relationships I've had in the work world where it's kind of like when it's convenient for the other person. And if you can be my equal to a point, you know, if I'm treating you like my equal because I need somebody to talk to, or, you know, it's going to help me look better in this situation, we're fine. But as soon as I get like a little step over you or your connection to somebody has dropped, then I'm going to start treating you like I truly see you. So I think that's kind of, you're kind of saying the similar thing to what I said with the female friendships. It would be really nice. And I think it is refreshing sometimes when it's like, and this person continued to be a decent person to Jane. And then, you know, maybe they had some sort of continuation of a friendship, but instead it takes that turn back to kind of, seeing her as the dog walker again. So it kind of comes full circle for Jane.
Mm-hmm. And even though, not that they know immediately at this point, but even, and just says the presence of, you know, the social capital of the man, of the fact that she was dating Eddie, even though she's inherited Eddie's money.
Right.
Like, she cannot be, you know, an heiress on her own and still be accepted in this, you know, community. It's like, if without Eddie, it's,
right. Right. Only if he's standing there to kind of elevate her. Otherwise, she's just the dog walker. I mean, that's kind of how she was introduced to them. I know I'm kind of like pulling from, I started at my job as the an office administrative assistant. And I feel like that's kind of, some people have continued to see me in that role because that's where I started. And basically what I'm saying is, Jane, I feel you a little bit.
So what did you think of the whole like reveal that, you know, Jane is, you know, actually Helen Poole?
I thought that was a really interesting connection to the original work, Jane Eyre, because Helen is kind of her sad friend that passes away that won't blame her abusers, right? She's just kind of like, oh, it's not like, oh, it's fine, but she's not as angry as I think.
She's not as vengeful, I think the word is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So I mean, it didn't surprise me. Like, that wasn't something that I was like, oh man, sweet twist. I just kind of thought that makes sense. What did you think?
Well, I thought it was, you know, I on a literary basis, I admired that sort of switch and allusion to the original work and the original story itself within The Wife Upstairs, of how they were foster sisters together. And the fact that, again, that the real Helen sort of died without really any inquiry, and the fact that when her foster dad died, that the new Jane could just walk out. And could just walk out and no one went looking for her. I like to think that people would want to like what happened to these two kids. But unfortunately, you know, I know that the foster system is broken and a lot of people do it with not the best intentions in mind. Or even if they do it with the best intentions, they cannot maintain it because the kids have so much, you know, psychological trauma and everything. And so, you know, to me, it was just a reminder of how scary that, you know, I don't want to think about it. But yeah, I'm like, seriously, this could happen.
Yeah, that's a good point. It is. And it is scary that could happen and somebody could just like wander away. That whole situation that Jane kind of came from was pretty terrifying. And I guess it makes me reconsider my thoughts about her and kind of understand that she's like, this is the flip side. You know, I could be in this shitty apartment with this dick guy who's, I don't really understand. I'm not really sure if I understood their relationship completely.
So it seems they were in a foster house of teenagers together. They didn't even know each other that well. She only like agreed to because she just needed to get out of like Arizona.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I didn't know if they ever had, like, I couldn't really get clarity if they had, like, a romantic relationship.
No, they, not for the guy's lack of trying, but no, I don't think they did.
Yeah. That has to be really gross to live with. So I can understand where if you were, like, slightly romantically interested in somebody.
It's like, again, we judge gold diggers, but at the same time, what was Jane's alternative? She was basically doing the same thing, being at the mercy of another guy who just didn't happen to be rich and it was a real creeper.
Right, exactly. So I could see where she would go.
Like, you know, I've I've thought about this over the last day. You know, do you know the YouTube channel, The Take?
I do not.
They used to be called Screen Prism, but they do a lot of really great analysis of media and literature about a variety of archetypes. And one of the videos they did was about the gold digger. And watching that video just solidified my assumption that it shows that the contempt that men have for gold diggers specifically just reiterates the fact that the patriarchy does not suit the majority of men either. Mm. Like, you know, women's traditional financial independence on men only benefits the top like 1 to 10%, because yeah, men are always in this state of insecurity that if I don't have money, that the woman in my life is going to leave me.
That makes sense.
But anyway, did you have any other thoughts?
No, I think I have all my thoughts out.
Okay. Shall we move on to the Gothometer?
Sure.
Okay. Alrighty then. Category number one, atmosphere and setting. What did you think?
Ooh, I'm going to give it kind of a middle of the road 5 for atmosphere and setting. I guess, you know, the South, there still is some sunshine and warmth there that I don't, that doesn't feel very, you know, English moors kind of thing. So I'm going to give it a middle of the road 5. What about you?
Yeah, I'm in a similar position where I gave it at 6 for all of those reasons, that it was very true to, again, like the plot and, again, Thornfield Estates naming the gated community after Thornfield Hall, but definitely not sharing in that Gothic ambiance as much. So, yeah, 6 for me.
Cool.
Yeah. Category number 2, the past.
Okay, I'll give it a 7 here, simply because a lot of the story is kind of, you know, B is reflecting on the past. We're kind of learning about what got them to that point. So I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah, I gave it a 10.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just because, again, you know, B trying to, you know, rewrite the past to make herself innocent, Jane / Helen's past with her foster dad, you know, the whole breakdown of, you know, B and Blanche's relationship, B and her mother's relationship, like all of those things, the past just kept coming up. And the whole thing was surrounding about something that happened in the past where the two women disappeared in that boating accident. So yeah, all those reasons I gave it 10.
Cool. All right.
Category number 3, the supernatural.
Well, this is going to be my lowest, I think, for this. I think I'm going to give it a 2 because I kind of mentioned the knocking at the ceiling. There wasn't a lot of supernatural that I can kind of think of right now. What about you?
I gave it 0.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, just because, you know, again, as much as, you know, even in the original Jane Eyre, as you always say, you're disappointed by the lack of real ghosts, but it keeps the suspense for quite some time in the sort of hauntedness. But just the nature of B being in a panic room, that doesn't really allow for that. And so, yeah, again, all that sort of stuff has been done away with for the sake of, you know, the realism within a modern domestic thriller. So, yeah, 0.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Category number 4, heroes, heroines, and villains.
I'll give this an 8. I think they, you know, as unlikable as I said every character was, there was some nuance to some of the characters. They weren't all completely flat. So I'll give it an 8.
Yeah, I gave it a 7 for similar reasons that I almost wanted to give it like lower in the sense of I feel like in some ways it was kind of mirroring what we say about like older elements of Gothic literature where it's not the characters we remember but it's the plot.
Oh yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, so in some ways like that, but again showing I think the sort of again questions of, you know, socioeconomic mobility and, you know, the duplicitous things that people do for the sake of that is that, you know, whether you take the position that, you know, screw the establishment, I am allowed to be Robin Hood and, you know, steal whatever to get what I need or not, you know, all those things, you know, by raising those questions, I give it a 7.
That, well, it looks like our score was pretty close. I mean, I gave it a 22.
One more category, though.
Oh, one more category. Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. Mystery.
I'm going to give it a 6 in mystery. I don't... I mean, it's based off of Jane Eyre. So how mysterious can it be? I mean, I guess like if this book would have come out before or around the same time as Jane Eyre, I mean, it's, I don't think it's a secret where the source material or, you know, comes from. So I'm giving it a 6.
Okay. I'm giving it an 8 because, again, there is some mystery in the sense that just by the boosting of elements of Rebecca, and so the idea that B is taking on more of Rebecca's characteristics than simply, you know, Rochester's wife's, you know, mental illness. So, yeah, for all those things, you know, I'm curious, like, what exactly happened on the boat and why did that all that stuff, you know, break down. So yeah, for those reasons, I give it an 8.
Cool. That makes sense.
So I tallied mine. I am at 31, I believe, and you are at 28?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. So again, a little lower because, you know, going back to the original Jane Eyre, that's already wasn't like super uber high, even though it's considered a classic in Gothic literature. Again, you know, because that's... Jane Eyre is more in like the Jane Austen romance category, you know, of
right.
Gothic literature rather than the vampires and Frankenstein's monster and all of those things.
Right. Yeah, it's definitely, and the modernization of this, I guess, took away some of the yeah. Gothic elements. I still think it falls into that category, but just yeah. maybe not as like, it's just not one of the higher Gothometer scoring novels.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was already adapting the original work, which was kind of in, you know, someone like your preferences was already lighter on the Gothic scale, and just and twisting it into a modern domestic thriller that just depleted even more elements of the quote unquote Gothicness to it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Alrighty then. Okay. What shall I pick a random passage to read?
That sounds great.
I know plenty of girls dream about their wedding day, but I never had, not really. Maybe it had just seemed like something so far out of the realm of possibility for me, or maybe I just had bigger things to worry about. Turns out I fucking love this shit. We move around the store, talking about shades of white and ivory, the difference between eggshell and cream, whether I like my hair up or down, what kind of veil options that might entail.
I think that's, I guess it's an interesting, just kind of how Jane is evolving and, you know, I don't know. I think that was a pretty funny part of the book, not like haha hysterical, but, you know, Jane's kind of coming to the realization that she's actually kind of enjoying some of these more fanciful things and just her ability to like, I guess Eddie's, you know, Eddie, quote unquote, not really his, but the amount of money that he had that he was just like, yeah, whatever, just do whatever you want, you know, go shop for the wedding. It's fine. That is a little bit of fantasy, the land there, I think.
Yeah. And for me, it's like, it's showing again, when people are on their moral high horse, like saying like, oh, tax the rich and everything. And again, not that they don't have valid points, but just again, a lot of that contempt also like stems from jealousy, and we want to tell ourselves that even if we landed so much, suddenly became rich by happenstance, that we would maintain some of our down-to-earth nature. And, you know, we want to tell ourselves that we would not change a great deal and that we would not succumb to certain elements of greed or, you know, splurging on luxury. And, you know, and finally Jane, you know, who was, again, called them Stepford wives and just didn't take these women seriously because of all the things they cared about. And it turns out once she's put in that position, she's like, I do care about whether my napkins are eggshell or cream.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. But overall, yeah, I really enjoyed The Wife Upstairs. Again, I felt like it was a very poignant book to have about, you know, just class and all the things like that, because it's just taking the original work. And again, like, I don't know, like, not that we don't have many strides to make still in sexism and racism, like, still we have various milestones that we can specifically point to that say, oh, we're doing so much better. But class is just so much more elusive than either of those two.
That is very true. And not a lot of people really want to talk about it in a way that is beneficial because that kind of, I don't know, you know, I work on a specific committee.
That's what it does.
Well, yeah, not only that, but then it also kind of lifts a veil of additional privilege that that I think some people are very uncomfortable with admitting. Some people like to keep an illusion of, you know, like, oh, I'm just like everybody else, when in actuality, it's like, no, you get to live a little different. Yeah, I don't know.
I had some sort of meme pass through my Facebook feed about, it was basically an oven that was open, but on. And the caption was basically like, if you didn't have to use this to like heat your house, you are privileged.
That's pretty fun.
Well, yeah, like it's funny like in the beginning, but when you think about it, it's like, that's genuinely how certain people cannot afford heating.
I just think it's funny because it's relatable. So that's all I'll say.
Yeah, so, but anyway, so wife upstairs, very happy with it. You know, got a lot out of it. I'm sure I will reread it later at a later date as well. And so tune in next time where we will be going over a short story of that is known as The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
A classic of gothic literature and literature of that century, and referenced. I see Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde referenced constantly.
Yeah, so. And it goes into my personal philosophies about the duality of human nature and stuff like that. So, like, I like a lot of the themes in it, but quite honestly, the writing style, not my thing. I thought I enjoyed better than Dorian Gray, and that totally was not true because Dorian Gray was brilliant writing wise.
Yeah, I it's been a while since I've read it, so I'll have to reread it. I think I listened to the audiobook the first time I listened to it, so I will be listening to it again or reading it.
So catch you guys later for Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Bye.
Bye.